tuned to the Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest stars, the members of the FCC, whom we respect respectfully. Now, time to get tuned into the frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
Hello and welcome to Wednesday's edition of the Turley Frequency, here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Today on the show, we hope to speak to Jeffrey Bruno, who is an award-winning photographer who uses his gifts to evangelize. He really does. We speak with Jeffrey in the next segment. Top of the hour, we pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and you're invited to join us. Text me your prayer requests on 251-928-2111. In the final segment today, we continue to ask, have we now found where the lost Ark of the Covenant resides? To find out more, you're going to have to stay tuned till later. Okay, with all this good stuff, I guess we'd better get this show on the road. Hello and welcome back to the Turley Frequency. And we'll just check if all our controls are running as usual. We do this every day now. It's part of our plan of action. Let's see. Reed, is everything up and running?
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
That's very good. We did that really quickly today. We're ready to roll. The show is ready to be served up today. Now, I need to give you a quick programming note about tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow, Thursday, we have a very special guest. I'm not really sure what was going through Michelle's mind when she booked this guest, but he's coming on and he will be talking to us. So he is a very special guest and he's going to be talking about woodpeckers. That's right, woodpeckers. You know, this sort of woodpeckers, the only thing I know about woodpeckers is a certain woodpecker that used to appear in cartoons back in the day. So, something to look forward to on that. Now, to less happy news, I'm afraid. Hawaii, what's going on out there with all the fires? What is going on? You may have been aware that the wildfires out in Hawaii have killed at least 99 people and forced tens of thousands of residents and tourists to evacuate the island and devastated the historic resort city of Lahaina. Now, for those that don't know, and I'm one of them, Maui is the second largest island in Hawaii by area and the third most populous, with more than a population of 164,000 residents, according to the latest U.S. Census Bureau estimates. Now, the western town within Maui of Lahaina is the worst hit, and it only had 13,000 residents and yet is the major victim of these forest fires, with entire blocks of houses and homes reduced to rubble by the fire. It has been designated the deadliest wildfire in U.S. history, certainly in the last century anyway, last 100 years or so. This is the worst that anybody has ever seen. Now, all sorts of bad news is coming out, but radio is playing its part. And we're just going to play a little report about what the local radio stations such as Archangel Radio, whatever the equivalent is out in Hawaii, what they're doing to try to help local people at this time through the medium of radio. So if we could just play that audio file too.
KPOA, Lahaina, Maui.
Maui's radio station's usually a place for music, but now they are a lifeline for thousands of Hawaiians desperate for information and assistance after those catastrophic wildfires.
Please, people are desperate. Babies need diapers and formula. The elderly need their medication.
The fire's burning cell towers to the ground and cutting off communication. So DJs on the island are now broadcasting 24/7.
From Oluwalu again, mahalo, Lori, letting us know that you are there and there are families there waiting for some kind of supply or any kind of food and supplies, and we are working on that for you.
And notifying residents where to find aid at the top of the hour.
All right, food distribution. Again, we have some going out to Napili Park.
Listeners also calling in to try and find their loved ones.
We hear them crying, their tears, their desperate pleas. It's real. It's very real for me.
The DJs even sharing their own grief.
I gotta send aloha to my niece, who lost her husband. Oh. He brought a smile to my niece's face.
Nice.
Big time, man.
Nice.
I can see the hurt in her eyes.
County officials now using the airwaves to give updates on the status of the fire and rescue efforts.
Today's updates. The Lahaina brush fire is 80% contained.
The radio stations are also using their social media pages to share donation drop-off sites, lists of missing persons, and links to donate to relief efforts.
We'll leave it there, Reid, for the moment. That is how your local radio stations out in Hawaii are actually trying to help people. They're trying to help people keep connected. They're also listing various emergency help that's coming to each person, but also listing, unfortunately, the dead. So all this talk about the death of AM and FM radio stations, this is when you need it during emergencies like this. People can tune in and find out what's happening. So we will, of course, be remembering everybody in those Hawaiian fires during the Divine Mercy Chaplet, which we say at 9 a.m. here on this show each day. Now, Pope Francis has offered his condolences, of course, to all those who have died in the wildfires. He sent a condolence telegram on Friday expressing his sadness. Then there were 55 dead. And his prayers and solidarity for all who were suffering due to the destruction caused by the wildfires, not least the loss of life. Remember, these fires have not just killed people, they've also left many, many people homeless. And they have also devastated families. I mean, I just had a text. I haven't had time to read it, but a large proportion of the dead, I believe, have been children. So you can imagine that there's going to be a lot of bereaved parents wondering how they're just going to cope, not just with the natural disaster of a wildfire, but the disaster of their family maybe losing a loved one. Now, the next voice I'm going to play is somebody who comes out of the woodwork at these sorts of times. And let's be honest, all politicians do. They all have something to say about these sorts of natural disasters. I'm just going to play you the first minute of what this man says. It's a familiar voice. You'll remember who he is. Let's play audio file 3.
Aloha, everybody. Like so many people around the world, Michelle and I have been absolutely heartbroken by the devastating images coming out of Maui and Lahaina over the last week. You know, as someone who grew up in Hawaii, as someone who has taken my family to enjoy the incredible beauty of that island and the hospitality of the people of Lahaina, we now find ourselves mourning the lives that are lost, and our thoughts and prayers go out to the families that have lost so much. The thing about it is, though, thoughts and prayers in a moment like this are not enough. We have to step up, and we have to help those families, and we have to help Lahaina rebuild. And the good news is that the Hawaii Red Cross and Malama Maui are mobilizing to provide.
Okay, okay. Let's leave it at that, Reid. Now, my first comment, and I'm afraid it is a comment about him, is where is the great communicator that there used to be, right? This is President Obama, right? Who was, I mean, whatever you might have thought of his politics and his views on certain things, he was a good communicator, right? He had a certain rhetorical flourish. Well, boy, he sounded dull. He sounded so dull. Now, I know there's been some press stories recently that have probably concentrated his mind elsewhere, but nevertheless, he sounded pretty fed up. But you might be saying, well, what's he got to do with this? Well, the reason that he has come back into the frame is because people are recognizing of what he has said. He used the phrase thoughts and prayers. Back in 2015, he scolded the average American for talking about thoughts and prayers. It was after a mass shooting, and he said, thoughts and prayers are not enough. Thoughts and prayers are not enough. And a lot of commentators have jumped on his latest intervention in the Hawaiian fires and saying, oh, he's changed his tune. He is talking about thoughts and prayers. However, it's not the thoughts and prayers that the Pope is saying and praying for the victims of Hawaii. I don't quite know really what the religion of the former president is. It's been a lot of speculation. As you know, I have no idea who he prays to or what he prays to. So we'll leave it at that. But it's interesting that politicians do come out with these expressions. My thoughts and my prayers are with you. Now, this side of the Atlantic, it's even worse. Because most of the politicians this side of the Atlantic make absolutely no pretense that they have any religious faith whatsoever. In the words of Tony Blair, one of his aides, he said, we don't do religion. And that just about sums up the British mentality across the board, not just in politics, but across the media. So whenever there is a disaster, such as it's happening, unfolding in Hawaii at the moment, people do default to this expression, thoughts and prayers. And it kind of leaves me wondering what it is they're praying to. What it is they're praying to. Now, we talked yesterday with our good friend Harry Brunius from New York City. The connection worked and we managed to have a great conversation about journalism, do you remember, and the nature of truth and news reporting. And I have to say that the thing that has really immediately taken its first casualty in these Hawaiian fires is any objectivity about how they started. Immediately, people who knew nothing about it, who lived thousands of miles from Hawaii, took to Twitter or X or whatever it's called these days, and decided it was all to do with climate change. Now, I'm not here, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a climate expert, I'm not here to pretend I know any more than you do. But that's the point. I don't know any more than you do, right? We don't know. And many of the people who got their PhDs in climatology from Twitter and other very esteemed academic institutions, they know as much about it as we do. Catholic Vote, the website today, had a very interesting article which says the following. Experts say devastating Hawaii wildfires not caused by climate change. Now, you heard Harry speaking yesterday about journalism. One of the dangers of journalism is not so much fake news or propaganda. It's laziness. It's laziness. It's reaching for the ready-made solution, the ready-made headline. Writing the article in your head before you've done any research whatsoever. And that's what a lot of the analysis, so-called, on Twitter, and even some of the news articles. If you go back and look at them, you will see that they immediately jump to the conclusion that this is all to do with climate change. Now, we've had a lot of wildfires in Europe as well, in Greece in particular, during the summer. Again, I'm not a scientist and I'm not taking sides on this, but guess what? We have wildfires every single summer in certain parts of Europe because it gets very hot. And it's always got hot. Even when I was a child many years ago when we didn't know what climate change was, we had wildfires. Wildfires happen. And they also happen in places like Hawaii. Now, there's a very interesting theory about how it came about, and it's to do with the sugar plantations that are on Hawaii and the fact that those sugar plantations haven't been cultivated or used in the ways that they have before. So they've been left to rot and the land has become dangerous because of its idleness. But that's, again, something for experts who know all about the topography and the climate of Hawaii. They can give a view on that. But I came across a really interesting video, which was just from a few days ago. And it is, well, it's somebody who should know what is going on. His name is Major General Kenneth Hara, and he is of the State of Hawaii Department of Defense. Right? So he's actually on the ground. He's part of the emergency services. He's a major general in the state of Hawaii. I would say that he has a pretty good idea of what's going on. So forget about Twitter, forget about politicians, forget about journalists. Let's hear it from one of our emergency services.
So the first thing is, for all of the fires, they haven't been able to determine what ignited the fires. There's three conditions that we got from the National Weather Service. They call it a red flag alert. So that's dry conditions, right? So you got dry fuel, trees, plants. You got low humidity and high winds. So winds 20 miles per hour or greater. And we had all of those three through the end of today. So we knew the conditions were very dangerous for wildfires. And then the reason it spread so fast is there are reports of gusts of up to 85 miles per hour. So, you know, that is so fast. And that's why Maui County had such a hard time doing containment of the fire. And because the winds were so high, we couldn't provide the helicopters to do the water bucket support. As an example, the military helicopters, their limitation to start the aircraft or shut down is 45 knots, about what, 30-something miles per hour, and it was far in excess of that, so we couldn't get those helicopters.
There you go. Major General Kenneth Hara of the State of Hawaii Department of Defense. They don't know what caused these fires, but they can make a good calculated guess. And it's a number of factors that just freak factors that came together at the same time and produced what is, in essence, a freak event. Now, do you remember yesterday when we were talking about journalism, we talked about the age of information? Well, sometimes there's too much information, and sometimes there's far too much speculation about little information that people have. And we are seeing that played out very much so with these Hawaiian wildfires. Whatever caused them, whatever defenses could have been put in place, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the kind of hysteria that has taken place on Hawaii, on Twitter for its own political purposes isn't really helping whatsoever. Now, there's one final story I want to bring to your attention, something you will have heard. It was mentioned just the other day during one of our Divine Mercy chaplets, which was that some things do survive regardless of certain conditions. And maybe, just maybe, President Obama, it's because of prayers. Take a listen to this short report from Fox in San Francisco.
All right, Jake, thank you for that. Unbelievable sight, actually, in Lahaina as well, amongst all the rubble. One very, very special building that managed to survive that fire. We've got some video posted on TikTok shows that the Maria Lanakila Catholic Church, looking nearly immaculate despite smoldering land and debris surrounding it. Residents are calling it just a miracle and a sign that Lahaina will rebuild. Look at that in the future.
Thank you, Reed. So there you have it. Now, he said it. He said it. I didn't say it. It's looking immaculate. And it's a church named after Maria.
Kevin, the obviously we're on the radio, so not really able to paint that great of a picture. But on the video there, they literally pan from charred trees to the church looking practically untouched.
That's right. In fact, I had to wonder if I had the right video, because it looks like a church anywhere across the United States. Beautifully kept, beautifully immaculate, as the newsreader said. But don't forget, these wildfires have been raging during this time when we've all been praying to our Immaculate Mother during her wonderful Feast of the Assumption. and she does good things. And I'm absolutely certain that that church was protected by an immaculate hand to continue to look immaculate. Something to think about in these dark days. Now, when we come back, we will be talking to Mr. Jeffrey Bruno, who is an award-winning photographer who has managed to mix both photography and faith in a very, very interesting way. So, for now, stay tuned to the Charlie Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. It's Charlie Frequency, live and exclusive here on Archangel Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Charlie, and it's great to have your company this Wednesday morning. Now, my next guest is Jeffrey Bruno, who is an award-winning photographer, writer, and creative director who focuses on issues and stories relating to the Catholic Church. He does so in a spirit of evangelization through imagery. In fact, you may have caught some of his images in the National Catholic Register, in Alatea, various other places. He's all over the place and well worth a look. He describes his vocation as to present the beauty and mission of the Church to inspire, educate, and inform. And he joins me down the line this morning from New York City. Jeffrey, welcome to the Charlie Frequency.
Good morning, Kevin. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
No, it's an absolute pleasure to welcome you on board the good ship Archangel Radio. Jeffrey, we have a challenge this morning, you and I. We are going to do photography on the radio, but I'm sure we're able to cope with that, right?
We'll do the best we can, right?
We'll do the best we can. Now, listen, you are a very, very good photographer. And I don't say that lightly. I enjoy photography very much. In fact, I enjoy it more probably than paintings and so forth. And I think that you're one of the best there is in the world today. And you are certainly one of the very best that we have that is working from a Catholic lens. But it wasn't always the case. Tell us a little bit just how you stumbled upon this wonderful vocation that you have.
Sure. Well, to begin with, I didn't start out, or neither did I intend to ever go into photography as a career or for anything for that purpose or for that matter. I had been in the entertainment industry earlier in my life, and I had a very dramatic and radical conversion experience back around 2004, 2005, which kind of set me on this path. And what it was is that I had begun doing web development, building websites and whatnot in the Catholic space, in an attempt or an effort to try to make things look better. And then I had encountered the issue of not having any pictures that I could put on the website. So I ended up getting a camera and ended up pursuing, photography to be able to support the websites. And then social media came along, and then all of a sudden there's this perpetual need for, new images and things like that. And one thing led to another. And before I knew it, it was driven by faith. It was driven, out of a desire to promote the faith. So, it's kind of like, I guess, literally the cart before the horse type situation where I, ended up coming into it, after surrendering to Christ. So it was a gift beyond gifts. And I'm just very grateful to be even able to do it.
I mean, for anybody who doesn't know Jeffrey's work, the fact that this man stumbled upon this is even more extraordinary when you see the fruit of his gift online or wherever you're looking at it. So, Jeffrey, talk to me about that moment. So you went out with a camera to take a few shots, as we would say, to illustrate your website or whatever, probably thinking, can't I get somebody else to do this? Do you know what I mean? anybody who's a web designer is always looking for somebody to take photographs. So you're probably thinking, can't I get anybody else? I better go and do it myself. and you stand there with, I guess, a traditional camera, and you're clicking away. When was the moment? Can you remember the moment when suddenly you thought, wait a minute, something is going on here?
You know, it's so interesting. So, you know, in line with what I had said previously, it's like my focus had always been, I mean, really, seriously, has been, you know, on discerning the call. And it was always kind of like everything else was kind of on the side, like, you know, photos and everything. So I was constantly focusing on trying to, you know, to just, you know, discern Christ's will for me and try to, you know, to go forward. And then it just, the rest of it didn't seem, not that it didn't seem important. It was important in one sense, but at the same time, it was kind of tertiary to the call.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't really a moment. I would say this though. It's the first, when I guess maybe the first credentials that I ever received for an event, that's when I realized that, you know, something was happening and people were starting to take this work seriously. And, you know, I realized that at that point, one of the things, this was very early on, it was probably around, it was the beatification of John Paul II. And
wow.
I had gotten credentials for that through a series of, I had to rent camera equipment. I went to the Salvation Army and bought a suit, and I got on an airplane and went over there knowing nothing about pool coverage or photography or anything, but I ended up covering it. And yeah, actually, no, there was a particular moment here, because this event had occurred. I had gone out there to cover it, and through an incredible chain of events, ended up right with Pope Benedict. And I took a series of photographs there, and one of those photographs in particular became the best-selling photograph of Pope Benedict for the year on Shutterstock, and ended up on covers of the New York Post, all different. And I never had any kind of, nothing like that ever happened before. And again, that's, of course, when, you know, again, that's when people started taking, you know, started turning to me and saying, hey, would you cover this? Hey, would you do this? And, yeah, I guess if there was a moment, that was probably it, yeah.
But, I mean, in a way, Jeffrey, that's kind of how it happens, isn't it? Because you try something because you have to try it, okay? So you had a website or you needed to get some photographs. So you try something. And then people say, wow, this is good. And you're thinking, yeah. You know, they're being kind or whatever. But the minute that professional organizations, media organizations suddenly say, yeah, this is great, can you do this? Suddenly you move from gifted amateur to pro, right?
Right.
That's a major transition, not just in terms of getting paid and all the rest of it, but there's a mental transition, right?
100%. Yeah. It there's a different level of expectation. You know, you're not just out there shooting for yourself, so to speak, you know, for a website that you're building. There's responsibilities and there's things that go along with it. I think it can be easy. I mean, in my case, I really can only speak for myself. When you start to get into that juncture where you start to turn professional, if you will, you know, like it just mentally, and it was never my intention nor my desire to, I mean, maybe that sounds silly, but it was always just, it was really purely for the evangelical purposes, you know, that I wanted to do it. The fact that I was able to pay bills, you know, in doing it was really a very interesting experience. I can't really believe that I'm on this journey and on this path. It's just, it's been, you know, for anybody who, you know, doubts, you know, whether it's a good idea to trust your life or entrust your life or surrender your life to Christ, you know, and ask him to write the story rather than yourself. I assure you that it is way better when he writes the story than when you write the story. He knows you better than anything. He knows everything that he's wired into you. You know, the joy, the satisfaction, the fulfillment, and just, you know, and obviously, you know, the end game, you know, eternal life, and that's not a bad thing either.
I totally agree, obviously, with all of that, Jeffrey. There's one problem with that, or one caveat with that, which is always the problem, right? Which is that he won't tell us what's happening in the next act. He only writes for today. He gives us, you know, give us this day our daily bread. And we're saying, but yeah, Lord, that's great. But what about tomorrow? What about next week? What about next Friday? Are you free? That's very true. The Lord does. But, you know, you very much see, I mean, we'll maybe talk a little bit later, a little bit about your journey, Jeffrey, which I've had the great privilege of interviewing you about in the past. But just on this idea of gift, I mean, you're a man that strikes me that, and please don't take this the wrong way, Jeffrey, you are constantly in wonder, in awe of the gift that you have been given. The rest of us think, yeah, Jeffrey's a great photographer. You're still sitting there thinking, wow, Lord, or am I reading it wrong?
Oh, no, you got it 100% right there, Kevin. That's, it's one of those pinch yourself type of things. And it, again, it's a simultaneous wow. You know, it's God's love and mercy, and it's, you know, the work that I've been, that at this point I've discerned is God's will for me to do. You know, the two of them together, they're so closely intertwined. Actually, they're inseparable. So, you know, this life has become, it's such a radical change from the days when I was pursuing a career, doing things that, you know, I wanted to do, and everything. You know, there were the little satisfactions here and there. There were little, you know, the triumphs and the tragedies, I guess you could say, of regular life. This is different. This is something where really it's you release control and you turn it over to Him, and then you see what goes. Listen, that didn't just happen. Okay, it's like, it's not like you just like wake up one morning and say, "All right, Lord, it's all yours. Do what you want." It's stepwise. You know, it's like one thing happens and you Absolutely. Go deeper. One next thing. So, you know, I very blessed to be able to be in this situation. But I really do. Yeah, wow, awe, all of it. Yeah, it's amazing.
But what you're talking about, though, Jeffrey, is something which, it's summed up in one word. It's vocation, right? It's what's God's calling you to, and God is uh-huh. giving you this gift, and then calling you and directing you and sending you out as an apostle with that gift. And you know what? Listening to you, looking at your work, listening to you, like you, I'm struck. I can understand the awe and the wonder that you feel at this great gift and the great joy that it brings with you. But you and I both know, we're probably of a similar age, that the word vocation had this terrible taint growing up, right? If somebody had a vocation, it was almost like they were like the plague carrier in the class, you know? They had a vocation because they were going to be a priest, right? Poor guy, right. The rest of us, we were going to go out and live life. That poor sod, he's off to wherever. So, yet... Actually, the real truth of it is that God's calling for us is our greatest source of joy. I'm sure you agree.
Amen. Oh, Kevin, that's couldn't have said it better myself. No, I mean, that's really what it is, right? It's like if we allow ourselves, I mean, okay, so let me, you know, maybe I'm too far ahead in a certain sense. In the beginning, you know, when you're seeking, you know, when especially if you're younger, you know, you're starting out, or even when you're older and maybe just, you know, trying to, you know, maybe revisiting, you know, some decisions you made in your past. It's like that discernment process, it takes time. You know, it is definitely an evolution and an unfolding process. But there's really no better investment of your time or your energies than to, you know, to discern your vocation. Because like you said, it's like there's once you find that, it's the thing that He's built you for it. You know, He knows, you know, out of love that, you know, He wills the highest and best things for each one of us and, you know, wants to see us flourish and be fulfilled. And, you know, it's our little, or not so little sometimes, but our attachments, you know, to our ideas or to our hopes or dreams that, you know, we're just, it's so funny. It's kind of like, if God is, I don't know that analogy. Never mind. Yeah. I'm running on. Sorry.
No, go on. Try it. There's only you and me here, Jeff. Don't worry about it.
I'll give this a shot. And thank you, everybody, for bearing with me. I'll put it like this. It's kind of like we're holding – it's like God's standing before us. And let's say that we're holding a dollar bill. I mean, this is maybe a terrible analogy, but we're holding a dollar bill in our hand, and God wants to take it from us. And behind his back, he's holding a check for $1 million. But we have to let go of the dollar. And so frequently, we're just – so reluctant to give up things that we think that we attach such great value to, that we think are the things that we, and yet it's like if we were to trust him and let him take that away, and allow ourselves to be detached, and I'm living proof of this. It's like, I mean, it really, and I'm not the only one, because I deal with people that have discerned a vocation. And to your point, just about, you know, vocations maybe conjuring up, you know, images of priests or religious and everything. Vocation could be, it's whatever God calls you to. It's like, that's your vocation, you know, so it could be as a single person, it could be a married person in religious life. doesn't matter, because there's so many different, it's such a big world and so many people, and each of us is wired uniquely. So, or that created uniquely, however you want to put it. So, yeah, that's, yeah.
I think that's an absolutely wonderful analogy there. I love that idea, the dollar bill and the $1 million behind his back. Absolutely. You're listening to the wise words of Jeffrey Bruno, who is a photographer specializing in the Catholic faith. And he's also a man with quite a story to tell. When we come back, we'll be hearing about how John Bon Jovi played a part in his conversion to the faith. Yes, I kid you not. Stay tuned to the Turning Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Welcome back to Eternity Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. And we are in conversation with Jeffrey Bruno, who is an award-winning photographer, writer, creative director, who focuses on issues and stories relating to the Catholic Church in the spirit of evangelization through imagery. And you've just been hearing the dulcet tones of John Bon Jovi, of Bon Jovi band fame. And they play a part in the story of my guest. Jeffrey, I mean, let's start at the beginning. Were you the inspiration for Living on a Prayer?
No, definitely not. Most definitely not. No, it's my experience with the Bon Jovi family, I guess is a better way to put it, began with Tony Bon Jovi, who's John's second cousin. And actually, it was Tony one of the biggest producers, I'd say, probably in the late 80s into the early 90s. He had a studio called Power Station. They had over 600 gold and platinum albums, and I had gone to work for Tony with the aspirations of going into music production. And it was interesting to, you know, I was able to rub shoulders with so many celebrities, you know, from different things, and got to really see, you know, what the business was all about. John, particularly, I had one encounter with that's very memorable, because I was working as a technician actually at the Grammy Awards, and I was standing up. They would make all the people that were working, you know, even if you're behind the scenes, you had to wear a tuxedo just in case a camera caught you. And I'm standing there. I think it was at Radio City. I think it was at Radio City in music in New York, someplace. And I'm backstage, right where the people, where you would step off, you know, to walk out to the microphone. And I'm just standing there, just wearing my tuxedo. And John walks up to me, and he looks at me, shakes my hand, says, "Hey, how you doing?" He's like, "Am I presenting with you?" And I'm like, "No." It's like, I have no idea. I'm just standing here, just kind of. But so that was my most significant engagement with John Bon Jovi. Tony and I, on the other hand, you know, we had a he was a great mentor, and he's a creative genius in a lot of ways. But I would say that in this, what that had to do with my faith experience was.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit unfair of me, Jeffrey. I was playing around with it a little bit because
for me,
one Bon Jovi, two Bon Jovis, they're all Bon Jovis and they're all Living on a Prayer. But you were involved in the music scene, the rock music scene, at a very, very high level in New York City back in the 80s.
Yes.
And yet, this is the thing. You had all this. You were working in one of the most, if not the most glamorous industry in New York City, getting paid very well, attending all these parties, having all of the world offers, and yet it wasn't enough.
Well, isn't that it, right? And I think that was actually, if I owe Tony Bon Jovi in particular anything, it's not that, I mean, I went to the highest level, that was the highest level in the industry that I ever reached. And it was that actually that convinced me that I was in the wrong place. And that kind of sent me off. I left the industry after the experience of working with him for a few years, and with really not much of an idea. I realized that all my life, you know, ever since I was a young child, it's like I was one of those kids when I was in third grade, And the teacher would ask, anybody here know what they want to be when they grow up? It's like my hand would go straight up. I knew exactly what I wanted to be, where I wanted to be, and what I wanted to do. It was never any confusion or deviation. I always wanted to be in the music business. I always wanted to be a musician or a rock star. So that was kind of, the dreams of a child in a certain sense. We know a child, and there's nothing wrong with that, of course, but where it led me was to a point of complete disillusionment with everything. I was like, all the stuff that I had hoped and dreamt for and thought was going to be the greatest, most satisfying thing in life. Again, my plan, right? And it turned out that was definitely not the case. It's like it wasn't, as a matter of fact, not only wasn't it satisfying and fulfilling, it was actually starting to tear me down as a human being and, threaten my family life and a bunch of other things, personal life, and definitely the salvation of my soul. So, I'm very grateful that, for the experience having been there, and then, that was the point where I broke free from that and went on a search.
That's right. And mercifully and thankfully, you've come back full swing into the church. Now, one of the aspects of your photography, which is, I think the first thing I noticed about it, Jeffrey, when I came across it many years ago, is that you have been documenting and chronicling the pro-life struggle in the United States, and in New York City in particular, for many, many years. And your photography is not just wonderful in terms of its journalistic qualities, but there is another quality to it, which I have not seen anywhere else. And it's that you really get that this is a spiritual fault line. And that comes out in your photography. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. It's so clear when you're present, like at these Witness for Life events, particularly the ones in New York, because they're supercharged. It's the extremes on it. It's all the extremes.
Yeah.
The diabolical it's like you can look into the eyes of some of the people that are there, and there's an emptiness and there's a darkness. The words that come out of their mouths, how they act and behave, it's as if they were possessed. It's like, because it's not rational. It's like it transcends that. And then you have these other people. It's interesting. I had a conversation with somebody yesterday about this and about, a lot, especially Witness for Life in particular. There's a lot of people that go out to pray, and they're very focused, which they need to be, on prayer and on the spiritual and on praying for the, for the women that, are carrying children, and for people that are protesting. They pray for, the health, the hope, and the healing of all concerned, all parties concerned. And in that, they come across a certain way. Like when you look at a person in prayer, you're seeing deep focus and deep reverence, deep piety, and real connection with Christ. They had just gone to Mass. They're all tabernacles of the Blessed Sacrament. They're all marching out into the spiritual war that's happening on the streets of New York. And so you see the one, the one that is unmistakably the opposite, and then you have the other, and it's really incredible to be present to it and sense it, because you can feel, in one hand you can feel like the raging heat, or I should say the heat of rage, that's coming from the one side, and then you can feel, it's a very palpable sense of peace, and love, and it's coming from the other. It's really incredible, and not too hard to take a picture of. You just have to show up for it. So,
well, you say that. I mean, that I think absolutely your pictures capture all of that, really, really do. And they capture the human beings that are involved, are caught up in this eternal struggle between life and death in a very dramatic way. If anybody's listening to this, I'm in conversation with Jeffrey Bruno. If you Google him and you'll see some of his photographs, we're going to give his website at the end of this. Believe you me, they are worth spending some time with. They are a good source of thought-provoking imagery, but also a great source for any prayer, especially in regard to pro-life matters. But you just, in some ways, to a certain extent, Jeffrey, but I've ended up writing an awful lot about pro-life struggle. And I don't know about you, but I sometimes I almost feel like God has given me gifts so that I can give voice to the people who are standing on the front line. Do you know what I mean? The people who can't articulate it, but I can do it for them. And your photography, I tend to think, is, well, you know, Jeffrey's the airborne division. You know, he's giving us the cover fire through his imagery. Through his imagery. Do you feel that? Do you feel it's a kind of a little vocation within a vocation?
Yeah, it's interesting because that's sometimes people will say, it's like, oh, you're the pro-life photographer, or you're this. And I mean, sure, you know, of course, you know, that is definitely, you know, a portion of, you know, what, or it's an aspect of it. But again, what I'm really, I mean, you going back to the comment you made earlier about, you know, the being the spiritual matter of it, it's about when I'm there, when I'm present there, really the intention is, or the intention that I have in my mind, I guess you could say, is I want to present the people, the heroism, the sacrifice, the devotion, and the power of the people that are in prayer. It's about them. You know, it's like it's really, and it's about what they're doing. And I pray that inspires others to join them either from afar, you know, through social media or through whatever, you know, pray from wherever they are in the country or the world, you know, for this intention. Or just to be able to see it. Sometimes when you see somebody doing something, you're like, wow, it's like, you know, I look a little bit like that. I could do that too. You know, it's like I could, and hopefully it's inspirational in some sense to, you know, to people that are out there.
Yeah. Definitely is. Now, listen, if you have any questions for Jeffrey, and it doesn't have to be about the church, it can be about photography, 888-928-0881, or text me on 251-928-2111. Happy to ask your questions. Now, I have a question which may be on somebody's mind, Jeffrey, and it's kind of something which I have seen in passing, and it's this. Some people have said to me, we don't really need cameras anymore. We've all got our telephones. What do you say to that?
I think that, well, okay, let's put it this way. All cameras, a cell phone camera, mobile, whatever you want to call it, smartphone camera, it's a camera, you know, but like any camera, be it, you know, a big DSLR or mirrorless DSLR or whatever, they all have their limits, I guess you could, is the best way to put it. You know, a cell phone is wonderful for things that are close up, you know, that where there's a reasonable amount of light, you know, and the manufacturers, I actually bit the bullet and invested in a high quality smartphone so that this way I'd be able to use it for certain things. But a DSLR is something that it doesn't try to do everything. It just, it's specialized, you know, for the craft of, you know, capturing images. So it's really geared towards, it's inclined towards, it's like every aspect of it is about that one thing. You can kind of think about that like in sainthood. It's like, you know, saints are people that are oriented towards Christ alone. Everything else is secondary. A camera, you know, like a DSLR or a mirrorless or, you know, a regular camera is oriented only towards one purpose. Whereas a cell phone, you know, it's a variety of different applications. So the ability for SLRs, there are places where I'm going to stop calling SLRs, just say cameras, meaning cameras, not phone cameras, where regular cameras have capabilities that are far beyond, like when it comes to using longer focal lengths, you know, to be able to shoot something with a very long lens that's far away,
that's right,
and for it to be sharp and in focus. It's just something, the capability currently is not there yet with you know, smartphones. That's one of the aspects. Also, just the ability to, it's about control too. It's like where the buttons are, familiarity. In a way, this is going to be a terrible analogy, but it's like a violin in a sense where it, you know, you can do beautiful things with it once you understand all the nuance to how it's constructed,
right,
the dynamics to the different, whereas a smartphone, it's much more restricted. It's more like the Toys R Us version of a violin versus Stradivarius. So, I mean, and again, not knocking it, but yeah.
I totally get it, Jeffrey. I mean, you're talking about something which is functional, right?
Yep.
It will take images, mm-hmm, absolutely.
Yep.
As opposed to something which is a craft, an art, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
a
good photograph will stop you in your tracks, right?
Right.
It is a piece of art. It is something which speaks to your soul, whereas a functional shot image of something, yeah, okay, I get it. It's Big Ben or it's Buckingham Palace, whatever you've taken a photograph of. Whereas what you're in the process of, what the gift that you've been given is something totally different. And I suppose it behoves you to actually have the craft, have the equipment so that your gift is properly showcased, right?
Sure. Well, I mean, okay. Well, this, you know, it goes to another thing. Or it's kind of, okay. As a photographer, let's put it that way, an evangelist photographer, however you want to call it, whatever it is, the stakes are not about me winning an award or making money or doing something like that. The stake is this, a soul that might be touched by an image and that might be brought closer to Christ. So the stakes are infinitely higher, you know, when it comes to this type of thing, as opposed to just earning a living or whatever it is, or personal grandeur. And that being said, you have to invest in the craft. Like, you have to learn, you have to study, you have to, because again, the you being really good at it, quote unquote, or having the skill and the mastery of the equipment and the, you know, the, that can save a soul. And that is, this, talk about responsibility. It's a big deal to, you know, to take the craft extremely seriously and, you know, and to continue to, you know, invest in the time and the equipment as well. And Mother Angelica, actually, one of my favorite quotes from her had to do with, she was offered, the way I remember the story, they came into her and they were saying, Mother, we need to invest in something. We have to buy this one particular piece of equipment. And we have this one, which is not too expensive. This one that's, you know, we can kind of afford, but it's, you know, it's a little pricey. And then this one that's really expensive, but we can probably not afford it. And she says, get the most expensive one, because only the best for the Lord. And I was like, Amen. Well, there you go.
Amen. Jeffrey, we're running out of time, unfortunately. That is such good advice. And what you said there about saving a soul, a little shiver went down my spine, because it's true of everybody. Anybody who's been gifted in any way, you've also been given the gift by which you can bring souls to Christ. And that is both a wonderful challenge, but it's also a great ministry if you accept that challenge. Jeffrey, it's been fantastic catching up with you here live on air this morning. Tell people where they can look at some of your wonderful photography.
Well, I guess the best place would be my website, which is Jeffrey Bruno, just JeffreyBruno.com. And that kind of will take you everywhere, because, you know, you can go to, I do some writing, which you can see on my Substack page, and then Instagram, of course, is a place where I am pretty present on a fairly consistent basis. So, yeah, please,
and
welcome.
And you're available for baptisms, weddings, and bar mitzvahs. Not so much these days. Listen, Jeffrey, it's been great catching up with you. We're just about to say the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and we will be praying for you. We pray for all our guests. Is there anybody or anything in particular you'd like us to pray for this morning?
If you would pray for all my family, my son, my daughter, my wife, my father, you know, yeah, that would be really greatly appreciated.
We'd pray for the whole Bruno clan. Jeffrey Bruno, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Kevin. I really appreciate it. It's been an honor.
Right, when we come back, we'll be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. Stay tuned.